Okay, I'd like to welcome Marge to today, and we'll continue by starting with the questions that were left from yesterday, and then we'll see where it goes from there. So Markandeya Prabhu, who's asking the first question?
I had just my questions that are still on the list.
Please go ahead.
Okay. So, if I understood correctly, the Srimad Bhagavatam class in the temple also falls into the category of Pancharatra because it's regulated on a regulated
schedule. No, Bhagavatam chanting, all these things are not. They're all Bhagavat. But the point is we're regulated. But see, the Bhagavatam is the Bhagavatam. The difficulty that comes down is we may not study it. So therefore, according to Pancharatra, then you have a time when you study Shastra. So therefore, we're studying Bhagavatam. But the chanting, associating with devotees, all these, that's all Bhagavat. Because you see, in the spiritual world, they're also worshiping the deity, which means Krishna. And they're worshiping with the 16 items. But the point is, this is being done because of their affection. So it technically is not. But we do worship according to Pancharatra because we don't have that mood, that attitude. So when you come to prema, then it's not necessary. But if you're on the platform of prema, you're liberated. You know, what's the problem in following the rules? That's the thing, is that we have to follow the rules because we're conditioned. Those who are liberated don't technically have to follow it. They'll study Bhagavatam anyway. You know, it's like for us, if we don't have the rule, we may, you know, that 45 minutes, an hour a day, we won't study. But someone who's on the liberated platform, they'll always be absorbed in Bhagavatam. Right? So therefore, the Pancharatra regulates our life to make sure that the Bhagavat is included in our life. In other words, Pancharatra regulates our life so that we follow the Bhagavat principles. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Is that clear the doubts or?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, very good. Some other questions you had?
The verses from the Bhagavad Gita you mentioned yesterday, 12th chapter, those always think of, Krishna says, always think of me, and if you cannot do that, then follow the regulations. If you cannot do that, then work for
me. Yes.
Do those refer to Bhagavad Pancharatra and Varnashram in some fashion? So they're connected.
Yes. It just, the point is when you take Bhagavad and regulate it, you know, that presentation, that becomes Pancharatra. And then Naishkarmya, that's Vedic, and Sakam, that's Vedic. And then the fifth option, you know, I mean, then after that, be a nice guy, open hospitals and this and that, then generally, you know, that's not what we're recommending. So, because those people are already doing that. And devotees, what facility do they have to do all that stuff? You know, but, you know, for people who are doing that, that's nice. And then the sixth one of, you know, then be an impersonalist where you're just absorbed in Brahman and all that, then, you know, that's better than being a gross materialist. But at the same time, you know, it's not very important. So better is meditation. That's then on the supreme. So therefore being a devotee is always the best. So in other words, the spiritual life's always interpreted in the context of devotional service. It's just wherever you happen to be situated, that's how you engage yourself. In other words, if you're just spontaneously engaged, then great. If not, then by regulation you're engaged. And if that's not enough, direct engagement, then you regulate your indirect connection to the Lord. Right? And then if that doesn't work, then you regulate your, you know, by the Vedic, your material pursuits, and then connect that to the Lord. Does that make sense?
Yes, thank you.
And then the next one is just be a nice guy, follow the Vedic regulations. So we can see is that regulation is for the purpose of moving us forward from being unregulated and being sinful into being regulated and being pious. Pious then into giving the results to Krishna, then that into working for Krishna, and that then everything centered around Krishna, right? And so then you have like that. Does that make sense?
Yes, thank you. And one also thing I had here is I wanted to ask, could you please explain why the Pancharatra mantras like the Gayatri are not so freely shared like the Maha Mantra, for example?
Because the Maha Mantra, without any material qualification, you chant, you'll get results. The Gayatri is without material qualification, they'll give you no results. So in other words, if you don't have that brahminical mentality or purity, the mantras don't work. But the Hare Krishna mantra, being non-different from Krishna, that original form, then there is no rule. That's why anybody at any time in any place can chant. But the Gayatri is you can't chant at any time, any place, by anybody. Plus, they're really hard to do kirtan with because they're only 24 syllables. So, you know. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah. So it's just the way it is. That's how Krishna likes it. He likes that there's the mantras that everybody can chant. He likes that there's mantras that are chanted by those who make that extra endeavor and are qualified for it. You know, because both tastes are there. You know, but the point is what everyone gets together over is the chanting Hare Krishna. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Thank you.
Yes.
So this is all I had for now on my side.
Okay. So anyone else has any questions or?
I'm Sundri Machi Das.
Okay.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj. My question is about Upadana. I would like to ask to try the things that we want to offering food, flowers. Is better work like a team or better just bring from home, collect alone? So.
Whatever works, it just depends. If everybody lives all over in different places and all that, then they'll collect their own flowers and bring them. If they all live together, then they'll do, like if there's a garden for the Lord, then you'd work together to go pick. But if everybody has their own garden, so then they would pick themselves from the garden and bring. It's just whatever the situation is, so whatever would be the best. Because the idea is if one works together, that's always a nice thing. You know, but if that's not possible, then you do it on your own.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense? So the natural mm-hmm. thing is, like you see in Vrindavan, everyone's working together
mm-hmm.
because the facilities are there. So if we have that kind of facility, we work together. But if not, that's the beauty of devotional service. We, as a group, we can do it. That's the whole point of Vaishnava, you know, Sangha and that. It increases it, but if not, then we can always just on our own do and we get the benefit also. So it's always perfect like that.
Mm-hmm. But to do together is a plus. It's
a plus because then you mm-hmm. have the association and everything like that. But if not, mm-hmm. like let's say there's no garden for the deities and everybody just has private gardens. So then you would pick them yourself and bring them. Unless someone has a garden, but they're not going to be involved in the deity worship. So they get someone else to pick for them. So that might be there's a group of devotees that go around and pick flowers from devotees' gardens that aren't, you know, involved in the puja. So you just have to see whatever's the situation. Because mm-hmm. working together is always a nice thing. But, you know, if that's not possible, then you can do things alone and it works.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Okay. Yes.
Yes.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna.
Prabhu.
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Hare Krishna.
You just mentioned in the answer to Markandeya, Rishi Prabhu and is connected yesterday with your answer to Mataji Vinata's answer to the question about this Tattvavadis and the discussion of Lord Chaitanya. You explained right. How in the movement of Lord Chaitanya we want to start to have focus on the bhakti. Otherwise, if we come to this point of liberation, then we cannot bridge over. So my question is, at the same time, understanding based on your presentation yesterday was that actually there is only one system, it's the Vedic system, but depending on our conditioning, the focus is on different systems like of Bhagavad Path or Pancharatra, Varnashram, like that. So my question is, in our general preaching to the people, and now we just in the morning mentioned that everybody can chant. Is there some rule which stage we should try to induce people to chant at least one round? Can we induce them at any level of their conditioning, or is recommended to just in order to bring them over this to this focus of bhakti, not just to tell them open a hospital, give some donation for some higher cause like that?
See, the thing is that there's sometimes an illusion about, well, we can just help establish people in goodness and all that. And so from there, then maybe eventually they get the bhakti. But that means you have to follow that, you know, very nicely, that Vedic system. Who's qualified to follow the Vedic system strictly? Because much of the time you'll find that those who don't like to preach about chanting and bhakti also don't want to follow the Vedic rules. They just want to do whatever they like, and they have an inclination for new age stuff or being nice or, you know, psychology or astrology or, you know, some other new age yoga or other kind of stuff like that. So they're not into Veda either. They're just into doing their own thing. So we have to be able to distinguish here is, are they situated? Goodness means you know what your duties are and you do it because you're supposed to. That's goodness. Doing yoga, that's not goodness. Why are people at the yoga studio? Right? Because the Vedas recommend that this is, you know, the process for self-realization in the Satya Yuga. So that's why everybody there in, you know, downtown goes to all the yoga studios and all that. Or they go down there for health. So is that's not goodness, that's passion. You know, it just may be there's a little bit more knowledge there because it's connected with yoga. Because we have to understand is following the rules and regulations because you're supposed to, that's goodness. Following the rules and regulations for the benefit you get from it, that's passion. We generally think it is passion is rough and this and that. No, that's ignorance. So those in the mode of passion are doing the things that they should be doing, but they're just doing it for, you know, for the motive. They're not doing it because you're supposed to. Right? So it has to be very, very clear here that what we're dealing with. Otherwise, we tend to make up our own philosophies. It's very popular these days that, we're just trying to be nice and good and don't want to push anybody, you know, give them their, you know, leave them with their free will. You know, we don't want to be too aggressive. You know, this hard preaching, it's bad. You know, it's bad. Why is it bad? You know, during the time of the hard preaching, hundreds and hundreds of temples have been established. Tens of thousands of devotees were made. You know, millions of books were disputed. Yeah, that's a bad thing. But now that we follow the soft preaching, you know, no temples are made. Centers very rarely come up. Hardly anybody ever joins. And generally to these people, the yoga studio and that, we never give them any books or any real knowledge and all that. And occasionally we might be able to distribute some prasad if it's, you know, organic and vegan. So isn't it just so much better? Aren't we just the pinnacle of perfection? So the point is we have to mature and understand what we're dealing with. Point is, if something's connected to Krishna, it's of value. If it's not connected to Krishna, it's of no value, no matter how nice it is. Otherwise, if being nice and being good, then everybody should be striving to go to the Satyaloka planets. Everybody's nice and good up there. You know, Daksha has his days, but other than that, then everybody's good. You know, Prajapatis are doing their Prajapati stuff. You know, the sages at Tapaloka are, you know, doing their meditation and come together and discuss, you know, things on the absolute truth. Lord Brahma naturally is, you know, maintaining the universe and everything's going on nice. All his associates in the court are all personified Vedas and everything. So, you know, we should be trying for that. You know, plus, here's a plus. The yogis, they go to, if they're, you know, proper yogis, they go to Brahmaloka. You know, so hey, you know, it makes a nice connection. We like the yoga studio, so Brahmaloka, hey. So we have to be very, very careful as, yes, if the yoga studio is where people are open towards the idea of spiritual life, but if you're not giving them spiritual life, then what's the point? You know, they have to actually understand what the absolute is. People can discuss about the absolute. They don't have a problem with that. We may have a problem with that, but they don't. And so then one has to see is that you're encouraging them to chant and all that. So then you have there, you have your kirtans and all that. And then you have that, you know, and you explain the importance of chanting. And if anybody would like to, you know, we have, you can talk to us about it after the program. We can sit and show you, you know, about the chanting and this and that. And if they want to, then they do. And if they don't, they don't. It's a matter of it's voluntary. They want to do, then why? But unless you explain that it's there, how will they know as it is an option? Not that we say, okay, now everybody here, unless you chant one round, you can't come to the program anymore. You know, what's the point of that? You know? So Prabhupada in Mayapur, they were running the Krishna book class. Because they weren't getting many of the young people to come by, not locally. They were getting all over Bengal, but locally not as much. Some. So they wanted to increase that to like the students. So then they used to run a Krishna book class. But it was, they were teaching them English. You know? They were, and it would just be on Krishna books. So they'd read Krishna book, discuss it, learn the vocabulary, discuss the points being made, you know, like that. So all the philosophy, everything was being done. But after 2 years, no one had, you know, shaved up and moved into the temple. So then they went to Prabhupada and said, you know, the program's not working. You know, no one's becoming a devotee. Prabhupada says, well, you know, are they hearing about Krishna? And says, yes. Are they taking prasad? Yes. It says, so how are they not devotees? You know, so if they come forward, nice. But if not, so this thing of that, it has to be, or it doesn't, you know, no, we shouldn't say anything. No, you have this. It's just a matter of you explain to what spiritual life is, what are the process. So if the process is chanting, then you can do on this regular thing, chant on your own, chant here, chant on the regular way and beads so you see that you get in a particular amount. You know, it's just like, do people not wear little things or stuff like that to check how many steps they do in a day? Right? You know, it means you're supposed to do, according to the modern kind of thing, you know, at least 10,000 steps a day, you know, then you can, you know, your health would be okay. So do people not wear little things or their phone doesn't check or something like that? They do. It's a regular thing. So people don't mind counting things, you know, because of the benefits they'll get. They don't check their calories. They don't check their weight. None of these things. No one checks anything. They don't check how much petrol is in their tank and all that. When it runs out on the road, then they just get out and hitch a ride and go by and get some and come back, right? Isn't that? Or people check everything. So why wouldn't they be, you know, cool to check this? You know, so you see when it can be introduced. That's all. It's not that it has to be one round or this or that. You know, if they get their good, if you have a regular sangha and all that and people are coming to it and it's understood it's a Hare Krishna sangha, then you encourage them there. But if it's just an open general program, then you explain what's going on and afterwards they can come and meet the devotees, and if they like, they can chant. Why not? You know? Does that make sense? So it's a matter of, you know, that maturity of understanding that connection to Krishna. That's the real value. That's the real important thing. So it's connected to Krishna. That's what makes it good. So if we're doing yoga and there's no connection to Krishna, what's so great about it? So many yogis are there. You go to Hrishikesh, there's tons of yogis. Everywhere in India, there's yogis coming out of your ears. Everyone does yoga. So what's the big deal? You know? But if in that situation you can discuss about the absolute truth, then that makes it perfect. The other thing is no, one has to understand it's the other way around. There's bhakti. Right? Bhakti is the basis. And then all the elements of bhakti then being performed in connection with Krishna, it's just called bhakti. But if these elements of bhakti are being performed, the mechanics of bhakti are being performed without connecting it to Krishna, that's where we get these other names. Right? So in other words, if you are performing pious, if you're performing the activities that should be offered to Krishna, but you're not doing it for Krishna, just for yourself, it's called karma. The understanding of the philosophy and how we're not the body and we're the soul connected to Krishna is just called bhakti, but doing it without connection to bhakti, we'll call that jnana. Right? Does that make sense? You know, so all these different aspects that are there, they get their specific names so that they, you know, and then within that, you have names of the different branches and everything like that. So all the things that you can use for Krishna then is all described in the Vedic literature. So if the essence of the Vedic literature is saying that everything should be connected to Krishna, bhakti is what's being described. People that don't understand that, they may catch the karma jnana. And so then they get engaged accordingly. We're just showing it that how the system is done. The Vedic system is there. So for us, then we do, because of the Lord's pastimes, you have the Shastra. Shastra is just Krishna's direction. And so from that, it's bhakti is the main point. And then to get us there, then you have so many processes. Right? So bhakti is such that just directly following bhakti, everything's perfect. Because if you follow another step by step, it can take you hundreds of thousands of lifetimes. So directly dealing with bhakti, that will take you there, take you to Krishna very quickly. Does that make sense? So it's not that you have the Vedic and Varnashram and then you have this option to do bhakti. No, Varnashrams are only for bhakti. Pancharatra is only there for bhakti. Yoga is only there for bhakti. Karma and jnana are only there for bhakti. You know, the Ayurveda, the Vedic astrology, the Sthapanaveda, or the Vastu, all that's just for using in service of the Lord. There's no other purpose for it. But better people are following the scriptures, because the scriptures are Krishna's direction, that they're following that than not following it. Better they're following it not connected to Krishna than they're following and not following and not connected to Krishna. Right? So better is following it connected to Krishna. Right? So that's what we do. So for us, these are just things to use, because if you use them too strongly as the medium, people get attached to that. Like I've seen devotees, you know, bringing up the point is that sometimes you have groups that they use Ayurveda as their medium for, you know, programs to attract people. They just present it as an Ayurvedic thing. They all go there and they dress as karmis and they talk as karmis and they do all the things like that, you know, and they gradually make devotees from it. But the weakness comes is those devotees are only interested in Ayurveda. They don't find the temple programs, the other devotees, the community, because they're not into Ayurveda like they are, then they can't relate. So it wasn't as much a medium to be used as actually a goal also. And then they do, there's another group does it with psychology, right? So many groups do it with yoga. Then you have the vegans, they do it with vegans. Then if they move into the temple, they make the temple vegan and the deities vegan and everybody vegan. You know, so if you say, no, we're vegetarian, they freak out. No, no, we're devotees. You have to be a vegan. What are you talking about? So this is the problem. If you put too much emphasis on the external or the mundane, even if it's Vedic, you know, it's a mode of goodness. It's still the mode of goodness. It's not pure goodness. So our emphasis is on pure goodness. And naturally, it's the position if you're not always in goodness, then goodness is the place to go. Like, like I think it was in 77, then Srila Prabhupada wanted to give sannyas to Bhakti Charu Maharaj. And so he had only been in the movement maybe, I don't know, 18 months or something like that, not a whole long time. And so, you know, a lot of the, you know, the big, you know, the, you know, established leaders in the society, they were worried, but he's so young, this, that, and, you know, and he takes, he's new, he could fall, you know, what if he falls down? And Prabhupada looked at him and says, yes, if he falls down, he'll fall down to the mode of goodness. Right? So his point, and then everybody just shut up because they knew if they fell down, you know, ignorance is a good day, you know? So they were quiet because the whole point is yes, you have that sattvic lifestyle, then you engage that in Krishna service. So even if you are not Krishna conscious, you'll be situated in goodness. And then from there, because it's knowledge and you're doing your duties very easily, then you can connect it back to Krishna. But the point is to get people that are in passionate ignorance up to goodness. Basically, you have about as much chance to do that as taking a snowball, you know, making a ball out of snow and keeping that down, you know, in the region where the devil hangs out with his fire and brimstone. Does that make sense? So in other words, you're not going to do it. We may be thinking, oh yes, we're devotees, we can do it. No, you can't. You can't take somebody past the modes you function in. What's your conditioning? What is your modes? What was your lifestyle before joining? So the whole point is no, you can help them become situated in pure goodness. That naturally means then goodness is there, because pure goodness just means there is no passion or ignorance. So that the natural activities of goodness is what we do. So since they're doing them, why not do them connected to Krishna? Then you get an eternal benefit. Otherwise, okay, whoopee, we brought someone to goodness. Yay. Haribo. And then next life, they take birth again. Where? Who knows? Right? So that's the whole thing, is this idea that we have to be popular. It can be a distraction. Yes, we want to try to do as much as we can to help as many people as we can. So therefore, any programs that work on a grand level is very, very good. It's very important. But the idea that the measurement of success is numbers only. Technically, that's for Vaishyas and Shudras. Right? Because Vaishyas, they want lots of money, and Shudras, there's lots of them. Brahman Kshatriya mentality is no, it's the quality that's important. So, Prabhupada wanted quality and quantity. But the point is just quantity without quality, what's the point? So yes, you try to get as many qualified people, you know, and many people interested in Krishna consciousness as possible. So you want the variety. You wanted more maximum books to go out, because we think like that. But the thing is we have to understand is we think like that, we engage it, but we shouldn't think that that's actually the standard. You know, but at the same time, you don't do the opposite. No, it's just quality. We don't do any of this status unless we can get the first class. That's not important either. Srila Prabhupada, when they were first in India, I think it was 71, he had come, Jai Pataka Maharaj and Achyutananda Swami, and I'm not sure who else was around, but this pastime was between Achyutananda and Srila Prabhupada. So they were staying at Sridhar Maharaj's mutt, because there was no, we didn't have a place in Mayapur. Prabhupada was looking to get a place. So we stayed over there because they were old friends. So, and Sridhar Maharaj is all about quality, no quantity. So he had one single temple, just doing like that, few devotees, you know, he'd speak, he'd be very nice and all that. His realization was very deep. What we see is that, you know, it never expanded. Even in the 80s, when, you know, the devotees started making arrangements to help build his temple, he only had one unfinished temple, and it had been that way for, you know, eons. So, you know, he was about quality, not quantity. But so they would stay there at that place because of the relationship. And so then, you know, mornings and evenings would be there, but the day they'd go next door to the Devananda Gaudiya Math, you know, for Keshav Maharaj, who was Prabhupada's sannyas guru. And when they come in there, there'll be like, you know, 20 sannyasis and all the brahmacharis, and they'll all be dancing and doing kirtan. And, you know, everybody was dressed in, you know, proper way and the proper color everyone had. And they would dress, you know, dance very nicely in an organized way and everything like that. And you see in their mutt, they had all kinds of things like this and that. I think, you know, they had different areas in the mutt, had different names according to, you know, devotional activities like that. So the toilet was called Gyanakonda, you know, like that. So, you know, stuff like that. They had book distribution, they had preaching, they had all those things. So then after, you know, going back and forth many days, you know, after some time, I don't know how much time it was, but it was some days. Well, in the evening when Achyutananda was riding back in the rickshaw with Srila Prabhupada, then he said, Srila Prabhupada, you know, it's like Sridhar Maharaj, you know, it's about the quality. He's, you know, tries very hard to see that everybody understands and has that quality of Krishna consciousness practice. And then Kesha Maharaj, then very nicely, he understands the institution and how to expand things and everything like that. He says, so they each focused in their own area. And then Achyutananda said, but you, Srila Prabhupada, you want both. You want the quality that's organized to do something special. Prabhupada turned and looked at him and said, now you understand. So that we always have to be careful is that it goes one way or the other. Either it's all about volume or no, it's just quality and nobody. There's no preaching. The whole point is that we try our best to function on as much the highest quality platform we can for the situation we're in to affect the maximum amount of people who we can. So one's always trying to do one's best. So that's there. And so we have to have that faith that bhakti, that one of the qualifications we see that is mentioned, the faith, that platform of faith means of nishta, you know, being fixed in devotional service, the beginning of the Madhyama stage. One of the definitions of the qualification is that one has that faith, that firm faith that only by devotional service, everything required is accomplished. You don't need karma and jnana. You don't need other philosophies. You don't need new way, this, that. Everything can be done by bhakti. It already includes everything. And if one doubts that, oh, but what about we got to have a job? What about this? Then you're not on that platform. You're lacking that faith. So we have to see is that that is the standard. So then when we see other things that seem to be different, you have to take it according to what's the standard that's set. That's how you measure. So our measurement is, how does it connect to Krishna? That's our measurement. Not how Vedic it is or how not Vedic it is and Yukta Vairagya. You know, it's kind of like we have Vedic or Yukta Vairagya. But the whole point is Yukta Vairagya is a Vedic principle. You know, oh, but we're using cars and phones. Oh, you don't use phones for phones in Krishna, sir. You don't use airplanes. So, you know, what about, you know, how are you making all these comments about the modern and all that? But the point is Yukta Vairagya starts with just engaging your gross and subtle body. It doesn't have to be modern. It's like taking that Yukta Vairagya means using modern and Vedic stuff you can't use in Krishna's service. Oh, that's Maya. You know, we say Vastu, oh, that's Maya. But Feng Shui, oh, hey, Yukta Vairagya. You know, vegetarian, Maya. Vegan, Yukta Vairagya. You know, so that's the problem is that we have our own definitions that aren't necessarily what is defined by Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. So we have to be very, very careful. We're allowing, you know, ourselves to be influenced so much by the media, you know, by whatever's the popular thing going on nowadays. And we see that changes from moment to moment. Like now, I just heard the news starting like a couple of days ago that in America, you know, this continuation of the being disturbed about the how the cops were dealing with persons that they were catching, specifically, you know, those who were, you know, African American, and they were not dealing properly. So that created so many, you know, kind of like protests and riots and all kinds of stuff like that. But starting just a couple of days ago, it went a step further, where they're going down and attacking and tearing down statues of the founding fathers of America, like George Washington and some of these others, because George Washington at the time had slaves. So now where is this going to go? You know, because if you really want to get serious, then, you know, First National, or means the American Indians that were there before anybody showed up, before America Vespucci showed up, or Columbus, or the people on the Mayflower, or anything, it was their land. So basically, if you're white, or you're not an Indian, you know, an American Indian, you're a foreigner, you shouldn't be there, if we want to really get into it. And so therefore they cleared them all out. And so now, you know, everybody's enjoying life and God, if you say, well, what about the American Indians? You know what I'm saying? If you want to get into it, you know, they're talking so much about this and that. They had slaves. Yeah, but they had slaves. And what happened to the American Indians? They were just killed. You know, so, you know, that's the whole point. Without Krishna consciousness, how do you judge anything? So we can use so many varieties of measurements. All these different, you know, new age measurements, political, economic, like this, according to our particular consciousness, our conditioning. But unless you use the measurement of what is given by Guru Krishna Shastra, that it's how it connects to Krishna. And that connection should be, according like Rupa Goswami says, favorable to Krishna and without karma and jnana. That's the measurement. That's how we measure everything. Because the main thing, it connects to Krishna, you move forward. But it connects to Krishna favorably, you'll get bhakti. Does this make sense? Any further questions on that, or?
Yesterday you also explained that even the demons are using Varnasham Dharma, knowing that it produces the best results. So the question is, how to explain that we are so unintelligent in our movement that, despite of so many instructions of founder acharyas, we are still not getting serious into that, and always complaining lack of money power, lack of Lakshmi power, like that.
Yeah. See, if someone goes by, you learn something because of, you go from whatever your impression is and move forward from there. Right? So now, if you've grown up in a social structure that there is no concept of performing your duty, and because of the duty, that's why then you get benefit. You know, let alone just, you do bhakti, and Krishna being the Lord of Lakshmi, naturally you have your facilities. There is nothing. Right? I mean, the whole Abrahamic, they're all very much into karma. Right? And Buddhists are just into voidism. You know, but basically most of them, they're all, it's either karma, jnana, there's no bhakti. You can talk about bhakti, but that's not what you'll hear people talking about. They're talking about being pious and nice and, you know, enjoying life and going to heaven and enjoying there. So there's no samskaras, right? Plus the point is the Vedic system, the first point the brahmacharya is trained in is respect of authority. And so the whole, let's say like your counterculture, the whole hippies and all that was based on not accepting, you know, the contemporary authority, the contemporary values. So they are rejecting all that. That's nice if they take up spiritual life. But the point is then they socially reject whatever's the standards. Like that. And you see all these different movements that they're going on, even the ones we said right now, Black Lives Matter, this, that, all these things. It's just about breaking down authority and establishing themselves as the authority. So what I feel is the authority. So what, but that's the mind is one of the 24 material elements. So we have to be very, very careful to understand the philosophy. So because of lack of samskar, there's nothing to connect it to. So if someone's come from a background where they've appreciated culture and seen the culture and valued the culture, you know, at least locally the culture, if not, you know, more, you know, world culture around the world, you appreciate those kind of things, they generally have very less problem with Varnashram. So the more their experiences are that the importance of culture, the less they have a problem with Varnashram. And the more that they didn't even think about culture, they just lived their lives as they do. You know, just however they lived, you know, either just for money or just for this or that, you know, or just for enjoyment or just to be lazy or whatever. They have the most problem. You know, because now if you're talking, let's say the corporate world is based, I mean, does that make sense? So that's the cultural aspect. Now if we take, let's say, the scientific aspect, one of the main points is you have naturalism, that life comes from matter. You have falsification, means if they can't prove, something's only accepted as a truth if you can't prove it's wrong. That's falsification. And then you have the reductionism, where they just try to reduce everything down to the mechanics of it. So that someone's doing something, he's behaving in this way, it's because of certain mechanics. It's not that he has a free choice or this or that. Like you say, oh, but he grew up in the slums and nobody cared and that's why he's such violent and this and they. So, you know, but the point is it's still his choice. Everybody still has a choice. So we reduce things down to remove the authority of tradition and that and just whatever our particular perspective is, then we use it to establish that. So from this so-called intellectual, you know, or so logical position, you know, of life comes from matter, and therefore it's just the combinations of matter that make things happen. So then nobody cares. It's up to the individual what they do and their group. You know what I'm saying? And something, if I don't find a fault, it's all right. But as soon as I find a fault, I throw the whole thing out 100%. And it's just like, let us say if you have a sack of potatoes, and in the sack of potatoes, I find one potato has, you know, a part on it that's a little bad. So what do? You throw out the whole sack? Or do you, you know, keep that sack and that potato that you could throw out that potato, but better you just take out that part that's bad and then use that potato, the rest of that potato in the sack. But because of falsification, I find one thing wrong. That's it. It's finished. Like you'll find sometimes if devotees are against something in Krishna consciousness, they'll use this system of falsification. Very standard. If they think, if they identify themselves as being, you know, intelligent and logical and all that, then they generally always use that. They find one thing they don't like, focus on that, and that's it. And because of that, then everything's finished. Right? Then you have the corporate world that if you're not making profit, maximum profit in the, you know, in minimal, you know, endeavor, then you're not going anywhere. And without money, you're not going to enjoy, you're not going to have social status, you're not going to have anything, this and that. So these things become very important. So then the Vedic culture, because you have to consider individuals and people, which the modern corporate world is not at all into, then it slows the process down. It's something that, let's say, might take you a week to manage by corporate strategy, might take you, you know, 3 to 6 weeks by Vedic. But the difference is after that 3 to 6 weeks, you have your results, devotees are happy, everybody's happy, it works as a community. But in the corporate, then no, I got the results now, and because that's the standard, then everybody else who doesn't like it should get with the program. So it's not at all personal. So therefore, Srila Prabhupada's mantra, nirvisesha shunyavadi, so voidism and impersonalism. We always think, oh, that's in India, the Mayavadis. No, that's right here, right now. The Western culture, they're just straight up front and personal. Does that make sense? So, you know, because of that, that's why it's a bit hard. But that's why the amount of Varnashram we're being asked is only that much is basically useful in Krishna consciousness. We're not talking about the whole plethora of it. We're talking about the fundamentals. You know, if you work for somebody, then, you know, you behave yourself and try to be submissive to what they want to get done. And then the company makes money, so therefore they pay you. You know, the Vaishya's got to be subservient to take care of their workers and pay taxes to the Kshatriyas and give charity to the Brahmins. The Kshatriyas have to see that they create a protected environment in which the Vaishyas and Shudras can flourish and support the listen to the Brahmins and support the Brahmins. And the Brahmin should be giving the direction on how Krishna consciousness applies, you know, to their life in all various aspects like that. So these kind of basic things. You go in the toilet, you wash your hands and feet and mouth before you come out. That's it. You know, when you're cooking, you know, you don't eat the food while you're cooking. I mean, I remember so many times, you know, time for dinner, your mom, she's not interested in eating because she's full, because she's been snacking all the way through the whole cooking process. You know, so you don't do that. You just cook for Krishna and then offer it like this. So there's a few rules. Keep your house clean. You know, like that. You know, have pictures of Krishna. You know, a few things like have a Bhagavatam set. You know, how much Varnashram are we talking about? Even that's too much for people because it goes against how they want to be. It goes against their freedom. But at the same time, as the people that are most objecting about the freedom, most of them, you know, who consider themselves liberal, they don't allow anybody else that's not liberal to have any freedoms. As far as the liberal group is concerned, the conservative group should have no freedom. So that's why you see with the liberal government, there's a bigger government. Remember, communists are far left, are far liberal, liberal to the extreme. You know, and then you get your fascism and this and that goes the other way. But the point is that unless it's balanced, you have standards, right? Conservative means they have standards. Everybody has to match the standards. Problem is their weakness, they can't deal with individuals. Because they have rules, you don't fit into the rules exactly, they can't accommodate. Liberals, they accommodate the individual, but there's no standard to judge it by. So just whatever they all kind of agree to, that's the standard today. Tomorrow it changes. Just like I said, the founding fathers of America, they're the last 200 years, now suddenly now they're bad guys. You know, so it's always happening. If you don't have a set standard by Shastra and all that, you know, it's just like in Christianity. What happened to Origen? Right? He was in 300 AD. He was one of the major preachers and saints in the church. And then it was accepted, reincarnation was accepted. But when somebody decided that reincarnation is causing us a problem because people don't want to get serious this life, they say next life I'll get serious. So they want to get rid of reincarnation so people get serious this life. It's either you go to heaven or you go to hell. That's it. One life, one shot. So then they voted on it and Origen is out. Now he's a bad guy. From being their leading preacher in their whole, you know, mission to being an outcast by one meeting, one vote. You know, that's that famous one, that Second Council of Nicaea, right? So, you know, like these, it's just, so if you don't have set standards, then there's a problem. Because what did they do? What did Christianity do? Not the original Christians, but the Christians who followed Paul. In other words, the Christians who followed the 12 apostles, the original, they accepted the old laws, right? What the Old Testament had. But those who followed Paul threw out the Old Testament, you know, on all that practices. And just, he wanted people to be modern. He was Jewish, but their family became citizens. He was educated in a proper Roman education. And so, you know, he studied the Greek philosophers and this and that. So he wanted that kind of, you know, in other words, at that time, that new agey educated person, then, you know, that would be the standard for, you know, Christ consciousness. And so then they rejected the Judaic practices, everything. And so now they have full amount of practice. This means they created them themselves. Where did they create them out of? You know, out of thin air. Right? And so therefore there's a basic, and then what happened to them? Then the Protestants came along and threw them out. And so now you need no church, no priest, no nothing. It's just you and God. Just accept Jesus and you're saved. And let, as long as you're our denomination. If you're any other denomination of Christian, you're condemned to hell. What happened to if you accept Jesus? They all accept Jesus. No, but only if you accept Jesus the way we accept Jesus. So basically means, unless you accept Jesus the way I accept Jesus. And so then it gets thrown out. And so the same principle of just whatever's authority, whatever's established, whatever's the tradition, whatever's the religious understanding, in a moment can be thrown out, and it just continues. So if you have a background like that, it makes it very, very hard to appreciate. But it still doesn't mean that's not how the world works. Humans have a nature. This is the nature. You want to follow it? Great. If you don't, if you chant Hare Krishna and focus on Krishna, associate with Vaishnavas, avoid the 10 offenses, you'll still go back to God. But it doesn't mean your life here will be that comfortable. You know? So, like that. You know, nowadays people are doing okay. Just they've had no calamity, so they think, oh, it's so unfortunate, you know. I'm stuck with the iPhone 10 and now the iPhone 12's coming out and it's been locked down and I haven't been making much money, so I'm not going to be able to buy one. So this is a disaster. Right? So that's the whole point, is that no, that's not how it works. So the whole point is if you follow Dharma, Artha comes. People just aren't smart enough. They think that, no, I work now, I got the money now. But the point is why is it you're working and getting that amount of money? Someone else is working the same amount of time and getting less money than you. And someone else is working the same amount of time and getting more than you. 10 times, 100 times, 1,000 times. There's people who literally get, millions of times more than you get for the same day's work. These billionaires, you think they're making... $10,000 a month? No, they're making millions in a day. And how many hours? So let's say I put in 8 hours a day and I make, $10,000 a month. Or let's make it auspicious. $9,000 a month, right? So therefore in a year I get $108,000. Right? So that means if they're getting a billion, that means a billion is 1,000 million. So that's 10,000. So therefore I'm working 8 hours. So they're working 80,000 hours a day to get that money, right? If we do the math, that's what's going on. So that's the whole thing. I got to figure out how to put in 80,000 hours a day. Then I'll make a billion. Right? But the point is he sits behind his desk, makes a few calls, talks this, thinks about it, calls this one up, talks to that one, makes a decision, and he makes hundreds of millions. And we sit in our chair and do this and that and talk to guys on phone and make our decisions and all that, and we make 9,000. And that's in a month. That's because someone else is making the money and they're paying us. Right? And then we're complaining. But there's someone else who's only getting, 1,000-2,000 a month. And the funny part is the guy that's making in the millions and the guys that are poor, if you explain to them the whole social system and all that and how it works and how we apply it in devotional service, basically they'll catch it on the spot and go, yeah, okay. It's the middle class that can't understand. Because the middle class is new. It comes up. When there's peace, it comes up. When there's war, it disappears. War, there's rich and poor. Then when there's peace, middle class comes up. And because they had nothing, now they have something, they tend to become atheistic. They tend to not worry about it. They think, I'm making all this money. I'm doing all this. I'm the controller. I'm the enjoyer. What to do? Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur talked about this, the degradation that comes up due to the mentality, shift in mentality in middle class. That was in the, you know, the 20s and 30s, last century. Bhaktivinoda Thakur talked about the emerging middle class. You know, if you go back to Romans, that's why Caesar was so strong, because of the emerging middle class. So it's always emerging middle class, right? The Renaissance, now there's emerging middle class. You know what I'm saying? So because of that, they think, see, I did this, I made the money, so I'm doing this. And so it's just, I only have to focus on artha and then I'll get money. There's no concept of performance of your duty is what you should do. And then whatever money comes, you live off of that. I put in my 8 hours a day. And if I get 10,000, you know, 10,000 bucks, then great. If I only get 5,000, that's what I live with. Don't complain. You put in your time. Because the point is, why is one guy getting more, one guy less? It depends how they dealt with money previously. And your money for your future is what you do with your money now. Does that make sense? So, therefore, to give a simple example, let us say now is Tuesday, okay? Let us say everything's normal. People are going to work and doing all the normal jazz like they do, okay? So now it's Tuesday, and I'm going to work. You know, I started yesterday on Monday. Today's Tuesday. I'll work through Friday, Saturday, Sunday off, or maybe Saturday half day, and then half day Saturday and full day Sunday. You know, it depends on what job you have and where it is. So I'm not getting paid until the end of the week. You know, some jobs pay you after a month, but whatever it is, I won't get paid till the end of the week. So on Saturday, I might get paid. But today I'm eating. Today I'm buying things. Today I'm going out and putting petrol into my car. How is that? I do my work that I'm doing right now. I won't get that money until Saturday. That means the money that I have right now came from last week. So in other words, what you're getting right now, that's coming from last life. What you do now is what will be in the future. Do you understand? So this whole thing is, no, I got to go out and let's have it do this and that, then we won't have money. No, you're going to have whatever you're supposed to have from previous. And then the consideration is what do I do with that money now? I use it nicely, then it increases. You know, it's like if I get money, I put it in the bank and I invest it properly, I make money. If I get money, I go down to the casino and blow it all on the roulette table, then I don't have any money. So the whole point is how you deal with money. Now, if you engage money in Krishna's service, that means Lakshmi is using Krishna's service. Then Lakshmi being devotee of Krishna, she's being pleased. Therefore, then facilities are there. Right? So therefore, just by the money that comes from last life, you use in Krishna's service this life, then things will increase on its own from that, because bhakti is the ultimate occupation. It's the sadharma. Right? So that's why you see the temples, brahmacharis and this and that, and previously, yeah, things went on for them. No problem. Right? And then if someone wants to be a grihastha, then yes, you have an occupation according to Brahma, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra. Perform your duties, do it because you're supposed to do that, and then whatever you're supposed to get will come through that medium. And you do it nicely, you do everything properly, you use it nicely, that ensures more in the future. But the main thing is you're connected to Krishna. That's what makes it of value. You're connected to Krishna, then it becomes important. Otherwise, then yes, just more mundane money for next life. You want to be here next life? Does that make sense? Yeah. So we have to be very careful when we're dealing with these things, that we understand the philosophy is the philosophy. Krishna's rules is how the universe functions. It has nothing to do with the modern rules. People say, no, no, it should be like this. It doesn't matter. It still doesn't work like that. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole thing, is that it doesn't matter. You follow the rules, you don't follow, it's still the same problem. Unless you solve the problem of Krishna consciousness, you don't really solve the character. Schooling and that, did you ever in school you read Animal Farm? Right, okay. Kind of like everybody's read Animal Farm. So now you have that farmer who's, you know, exploiting everybody on that, and we want, you know, equal rights for the animals and all that and all this. So then the animals rise up and all that and get rid of the farmer. And then now they need some leadership. So then the pigs, you know, do, but then, you know, to do their pigs, you know, to do their management, you know, they need a place to have their meetings. So they move into the house and then, you know, like that. And then with time, the animals, and then the same exact lifestyle that the farmer led. Now the same thing is going on, but instead of one farmer, now it's, you know, however many pigs it is, 10, 12 pigs, 20 pigs. And they look in through the window, the animals look in the window, and there's the pigs sitting around the table, all dressed in the farmer's clothes. So why is that written? Because they've observed it. What have they observed? Anytime someone on the bottom goes, you know, yeah, we want our rights and like that, as soon as they get to the top, they restrict everybody else's rights. It's just the way it goes. So unless there's Krishna consciousness, unless there's the Vedic culture, how do you keep that from happening? How do you keep that from happening? Because what's the key? A person has, you know, if they're controlled by lust, anger, greed, envy, illusion, and madness, then what's going to keep them from doing the same thing? I'm upset because I'm not the one exploiting. Very rare do you find a person who's just really nice to everybody. They're rare in history. But you see amongst the devotees and all that, that's standard. But amongst the karmas, how many people were just really nice? Right? Francis of Assisi, okay, he was a nice guy. You know, what was her name? Joan of Arc, you know, she was nice. A few other people that were nice, you know, but limited on the mundane platform. There's a few, handful. And nobody cares about them. You know, nothing much changes. Did the church change because of Francis? Did the political scene change because of Joan? You know, are there no poor people anymore because of Mother Teresa? Well, just everything just goes on. Does that make sense? So the modes of nature make everything happen. And so our choice is, do we want to take our position and connect it to Krishna? And then whatever our conditioning is, use that for Krishna. And how are we going to decide what we'll do? That's by one is that the direct things as the soul, everyone's hearing and chanting and all that. But then what you can do as an occupation, you know, what, like those kind of activities, then that's according to what conditioning you have. And since we're not the body, what does it matter? It only matters because we make it into a social prestige. Oh, I want to be the president, you know, or I want to do this or I want to do that. You know, what about just the regular other jobs? If that's the thing, then everybody should be the temple president. Yeah. I can rotate 30 devotees in the temple every day. You know, one day you're the temple president, you know, and change the next day. So we see is that it's just based on these, as we said before, these particular samskaras that we have, impressions that we have from modern science, from the corporate world, you know, like that, just, you know, gross sense gratification, desire for that. And so because of that, then it makes it hard to accept. But if we have faith and we try to appreciate it, then we apply. And if there's a mistake, adjust the mistake. Don't throw out the system. Because if we throw out the system, or we say, oh, the Vedic doesn't work, but, you know, is the modern system working? Is the modern, everybody's doing well, everybody's comfortable, everybody's equal, everybody's like this? If there are, why is there rights going on in America? America, the land of the free, home of the brave. you know. In France, it's going on, riots. That's the liberty, equity, fraternity, you know. So that's the difficulty, is that it doesn't work. And so then you need to accept that the mundane without Krishna does not work. The Vedic without Krishna, it will make things go along, but you won't go back to Godhead. But at least materially, you're following the laws of nature. But how is it that you reject the varnashram means following the laws of nature. Rejecting that means going against the laws of nature, or at least ignoring the laws of nature. So how is it not an option? You know, how are we going to get something out of the kitchen to eat unless we cook? Oh no, but cooking, that's so archaic, that's old, and that's coming from all these religious things. It's Kali Yuga, you know, we can't follow all these rules and all that, so we don't cook and all that, so. And then how are you going to get something to eat? You know. So the difficulty comes down is that it's not being seen that it's Krishna's system, it's Krishna's world. We're taking it, no, it's the first world's world. You know, it's America's world and England's and France and Germany and, you know, at least when it comes to pasta, then Italy, you know, like that. And did I leave anybody out? Oh, yeah, Switzerland, they're kind of cool, but we won't talk about it in months. It's Swedes also, okay, but we won't talk about them much. And so then how is that universal? How is that going to work? How is it working out for those countries? You know, they're rioting in London, in England, they're rioting in France, they're rioting in America. You know, so that means there's something wrong with their systems. It's not just, you know, the COVID-19 or, you know, whatever else is going on. Yeah, everybody has their problems. But it's just like Americans can't sit in their house with their family. They've never done that. It's like freaky for them. So they're going nuts. Well, while most other cultures in the world, you know, it's like getting a you know, 6 month vacation, you know, you can hang out with the family and spend time with the kids. It's okay. It's nice. You know, you like some money, but you don't mind sitting home with kids. So Americans, they want the money and they can't stand being at home with the wife and kids. So what do you have to do? You go out and riot. Otherwise, I was talking with my mom the other day, and I mentioned about, yeah, as far, why is it there's such a strong reaction to this, you know, this one black guy that got killed, what is it, George Floyd or something like that? So it's unfortunate. It shouldn't be happening. And I remember there was one more in Los Angeles back in the 80s, and then I kind of remember something back in the 60s. So as far as I understood is that over the last, you know, 60 years, then, you know, 50, 60 years, that there were three major events like that. She said, no, there's been 20 of these major events, 10 of these major events in the last 20 years. No, she said 20 in the last 10 years, excuse me, the other way around. So that means that there's been way more. It's just a constant thing that's going on. So why is it this time it blows up? Other time, everyone's busy doing what they're doing. And it's sad. A few people come out. People make comments. There'll be, you know, some tweeting, this and that. But they're going out on the street because they have nothing to do. There's no job. There's no school. There's no nothing. You know, it may be a worthwhile, issue. But that people are putting so much effort is simply because there's nothing going on. If it was their regular, normal life going on, they'd be too busy.
Before these riots started, Maharaj, then the biggest concern in the Western world was that with everyone being at home, there'd be more domestic violence. So that was kind of coming first at home, and then now that it's out on the streets.
Yeah, yeah. So it's just how many times can you slap each other around at home? So now you got to go out on the street to, you know, express your individuality. You know, separate from those people that, you know, really sincerely want to do something. But, you know, so the point is that it becomes such a issue because of this. Yeah, domestic violence, why domestic violence? Because people should be happy to sit at home. right? They sit at home on the weekend, you know, the family, there's no domestic violence. So why should there be if they're there all day? You know, you're supposed to like your family. But whatever. So in the Vedic system, then, you know, these things are comfortable. You know, Indians can sit at home with the family. They don't have so much problem. And they have a lot of family. You're not talking necessarily nuclear families here. You're talking about, you know, how you say, molecule families or, you know, how you say, I don't know what would be bigger than a nuclear, you know, or a group of molecules together.
A molecular
family. Yeah, you know, so they're cool.
Should we take some more questions, Maharaj?
I've been grumpy enough for the last, you know, half an hour, so yes.
Okay. Saddam approval?
Hare Krishna. Yes.
Back home. Back yes. Home, back the creek.
Yeah, we hope you will.
Okay. So what's happening?
Yesterday we were cut off by our bad internet connection, so I got stuck, frozen, not only on the screen, but also with my idea.
I see. Okay.
So... it actually sprang from a discussion amongst devotees after that discussion on Chaitanya Charitamrita. Is prema actually prerequisite for going to the spiritual world, or one can end up there just by attaining one of these four liberations without getting prema?
Point is how do you see? Here's the question. Here's the problem that comes up. Is the problem is there is because we have our own definition of what the spiritual world is. So we're taking the spiritual world by time and space, not by its actual nature. Right? So then the thing is then for us, spiritual world means Goloka Vrindavan. That's it. There is no other option.
Vaikuntha.
And so, No. Well, yeah, Vaikuntha or whatever it is. But we're talking Goloka and Goloka Vrindavan. So that's it. That's the spiritual world. And so since there we know that there's no envy or this or that, so therefore you have to be on the platform of prema. So then there's also the illusion that the living entity being tatastha, which means neutral, prema is positive, that we fall from prema. No, you can't fall from prema. No one falls from prema. You can fall from neutral. But if you don't have any feeling either way, then you can fall into the material world. You can also, if you have no either way, you could also get influenced and go towards prema. Right? So that means that the living entities are, Prabhupada said, from here we go to Gokul, wherever Krishna is performing his pastimes, you know, in this universe or some other universe, wherever it is, then we'll take birth there. That's the spiritual world we're going to. And according to Brahma Samhita, that the residents of Goloka don't consider these two places different. We make it different because of time and space, but those who actually live in Goloka don't make any difference. So just as seen, one is higher, one's lower. One's in the three portion of Krishna's creation, the spiritual, and one's within the one quarter of the creation, the Mahatattva. But the point is they're both exactly the same place. And so, therefore, then, just take for example, in the Krishna book, then you have, when it's talking about the introduction to rasa dance, right? So then Krishna plays the flute. And then the gopis leave to go meet him in the forest. But not all the gopis got to go. Why not? Because they weren't completely attached to Krishna, like those ones who went. So that means they don't have prema. They're in the spiritual world. They're part of the pastime. It's in the association of Krishna and his eternal associates, specifically the associates, that we develop that love for Krishna following in their footsteps. Once you get the prema, now you're a permanent resident of the spiritual world. Otherwise, then, you know, you're there. And then when you develop prema, then you stay there. Now that, because we'll just be part of Gokul. But then when you come to the platform of prema, then we'll be part of Goloka. Right? And we can come to Gokul to also help in the pastimes or whatever. So I'm just saying, you know, the points are just all right there in the books that you can see as you put all these together, you can see what's going on. But because of time and space, then no, it has to be Goloka Vrindavan. And we have to be on the platform of prema. So how can someone go there unless they have prema? Point is you remember Krishna at the time of death, you're transferred to the spiritual realm. And then whatever level of advancement you're on, you'll continue from there up to prema. Point is now if you go to the spiritual realm, you don't have any conditioning. Right? And so therefore you move forward very, very quickly. So we see in Krishna's pastimes when they're there, then all those persons will come to the platform of prema while the prakat lila is there. And then the lila goes aprakat. Mm-hmm. Right? The pastimes are going on now, just we don't see them. Does that make sense? So yes. That means you remember Krishna. It doesn't matter what your position, you go back to Godhead. Now, once you get back to Godhead, then the association of the Vaishnavas there, then you're going to come to the platform of prema.
But once...
Because you advance because of association. Just like, why did someone become a devotee? They just became, or they associate with devotees. Why do you advance? Because of devotees. So the same way, you know, so if by association of devotees, I got from Agyata Sukriti to Shraddha. Then from the association of devotees, I got from Shraddha up to Bhava. So why not by the association of devotees, I'll get from Bhava to Prema? You were saying? Sorry.
But once in Gokul, can we, without our conditioning, but yet not having developed Prema, can we still make a stupid decision and come back?
Yeah, why would you come back? It's just like, you don't know what fire is, you stick your finger in the fire. Are you going to stick your finger in the fire again?
No.
No, so you know what the material world is. Why do you want to come here? We think it's a great place. You know, it's just, in Kali Yuga, it's mentioned that demigods don't even come here to pass urine. You know, we have a fancy car, we have a Ferrari, we have, or our Lamborghini or our Rolls Royce, they go around in chariots that just drive because they want it to go. It drives them to pious activities. You know? So it doesn't need a motor and all that kind of stuff. You know, so I'm saying, why would they, you know, what's the big deal here? What have people got here that's so special? You know, that's the whole thing, is that we have somehow or another thinking this place is a great place. No one's going to come back here. You go back to there. Why would you come here? That's why Krishna says, once going there, you'll never return. Right? You make the mistake once, but you're not going to make the mistake again. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay, so it's worth it. You won't come back.
Thank you. I have one more question.
Okay.
It is unrelated to this topic, but it is about Krishna's names. Like, we have been helping one young lady, trying to bring her closer to Krishna, and she likes reading Gita. Like, we read Gita or Bhagavatam weekly together and discuss. And she even... chanted a little bit, but she actually has a problem with the name Krishna. When he speaks about the Supreme Personality of Godhead, she says just God. And I try to explain to her it is a secondary name, this and that, not the same benefit and formal relationship. But then we found out that she likes Madhava. She doesn't Madhava. Like Krishna, but she likes Madhava. So how can we help her to go further? She asked me if she can chant on Japa Jayarada Madhava. I thought it was completely...
why not? I mean, just the point is, you can do it, it's not like a standard at all. The point is they can do kirtan of that or things like that. The point is, it's why that, it's the Maha Mantra, it's already there. So in other words, when she's chanting Krishna, she can think of Madhava. That's there. Or you can try, she can do kirtan with Radha Madhava or any songs that have Radha Madhava in it, you know? And so, yeah, it's, why not? Because if she just hears more about it and that, as the heart gets purified, it'll get easier. Krishna has unlimited names, but as pointed out, the primary name, I mean, the most prominent name is Krishna, because Krishna simply means all attractive. So God's the most attractive one, because everyone's attracted by the six opulences. Anyone has any of the six opulences, people are attracted. But Krishna has all of these opulences in full. So he's the most attractive. So therefore, that's why the name Krishna. But the point is, there's no difference between the name Krishna and Madhava and things like that. So then, you know. Yeah, I wouldn't know what to say other than sing a lot of Jayarada Madhava or some other songs. So.
She goes so far that when we meet, she doesn't say Hare Krishna, but she says Jayarada Madhava.
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah.
That's fine.
So that's like a secret exchange.
Yeah. Yeah, so just like that. Point is just you hear, you know, read the pastimes, you know, do something, engage in service, take prasad. And gradually, as they get purified, then these things might, might adjust.
Okay. Thank you.
You know, you just find some connection to Krishna. I know there was one devotee in Delhi. He was a devotee of Krishna. He was ISKCON devotee, but his wife wasn't. She was a Ram Bhakta. Right? So she, because Ram is, everything regulated, everything very, according to Dharma and all that. Well, Krishna is not. So she didn't like Krishna. But she'll worship Ram. So you start wherever you can. It's a unique case. So it doesn't, you don't set a standard by this, but you find Krishna. Otherwise, you can sit there and just chant Madhava, 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 or Radha, Madhava, Radha, Madhava, Radha, Madhava. Just chant that on the beats.
Okay.
Or whatever it is to get her to chant. But the point is that, it's the names of Krishna, so you're going to get benefit. It's like, what do you call it? What was his name? Oh, the hunter, Magrari, I think. It was either Magrari or Dasaratnakar. I think it was Dasaratnakar. That he couldn't chant the Lord's name. He was so sinful. Maybe here this lady can chant, but it says he was so sinful. So he said, can you say Mara? Mara means dead or, kill. Because he was a hunter. So, yeah, of course you can say Mara. But Mara, 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 it's this Rama backwards, right? So it's a Mara, 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 Mara. He just chanted Mara until he got purified, because he's chanting Ram just backwards. Until he got purified, then he can chant Ram's name. So then, chant Radha Madhava.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. But don't let it become a standard in the zone. No, it's whatever name you want to chant. Hare Giri Bharad Hari, Hare Giri Bharad Hari, Giri Bharad Hari, Giri Bharad Hari, Hare Hare. Like that, no.
Okay.
Yeah, don't start anything like that.
Thank you. And one more thing
okay.
I wanted to ask about worship of, Giriraj is the Lord and the servant, the best of servant, and at the same time,
yeah.
Krishna. And Lord Chaitanya,
yeah.
He's also
yeah.
the Lord and the servant.
Yeah.
So when we are worshipping them, what is the difference in our approach to them, to worshipping Giriraj and when we are worshipping?
See, the point is that Krishna is in the mood of serving Radha and Krishna. That's his mood. We know it's Krishna. So why would that change our mood?
Mm.
That's his mood, not our mood.
Okay.
You know, it's just like the spiritual master. Is he not servant? Does that change how we deal? That's his move. So the point is Giriraj is Krishna. And if he has a mood to serve, you know, the pastimes of you know, with Radharani, then what's the problem? That's his. That doesn't mean now, oh, we don't put a peacock feather, this and that. We come up with all these so-called spontaneous devotional service rules, extremely strict. But what has that got to do with reality? Point is, it's the same Krishna. It's just like if Krishna is everything, then who's going to be Govardhan Hill?
Krishna.
Right? Yeah, so then what's the problem? So therefore, Krishna is serving Krishna. But there's the same personality. Why not the same personality? You'd want it to be the same personality, because if Krishna's then with Radharani and they're performing, because it said, where's the most intimate pastimes? At Radhakund. Yeah, Govardhan and of that Radhakund. So now, and Radharani, if she's around Balaram, then what happens? Everything becomes very formal. Yeah, okay. So now, Balaram is expanding. It's his energies. It's the Dham and the Yoga Maya and all these different kinds of things. But the point is, if you're going to have, and therefore you have these wonderful pastimes, if you're going to have the most intimate pastimes, then naturally it would be Krishna, not Balaram. So then what's the problem if he takes that position? You know, I mean, if he has a taste, you know, he has a taste taking Radharani's mood and that way being servant, but here he's his own mood at being servant. What's the problem? Balaram is the same. He's the supreme personality of servant or Godhead, but he has a different kind of personality. But here, why can't Krishna be a servant and maintain the same personality? You know, so all these tastes are there. So then, as Lord Chaitanya is this and that, so then he was worshiping as Krishna. Lord Chaitanya was. We're the ones that are such paramahamsas that we're above Lord Chaitanya that, oh no, he's not Krishna, he can't wear the peacock feather, this, that, all this time. Where does this nonsense come from? You know, we don't want to disturb his mood as if we have the power to disturb his mood. We're so powerful. What we do is so consequential. It's so important. You know, it's like, what's it? Point is there's a standard. We follow the standard. Lord Chaitanya said that the Govardhan is non-different from Krishna, Raja Krishna, the son of Maharaj Ananda. So then are we going to follow Lord Chaitanya? Or are we going to make up our own idea?
Yes. And one related thing, nowadays it has become quite popular.
Popular. Yeah, something popular. Like that. The word's popular. It has to be popular.
Yes. That people, at least at home, when they take prasadam, they don't close the deities. They don't put the curtain or something. And I don't know what is the explanation for that. We were brought up differently. We were taught that.
No. It means the standard is it says in Nectar Devotion, you don't eat directly in front of the deity.
Yes. So this.
So that's the stand. New thing means not doing what they're supposed to do. It's just like kids, do they tie their shoelaces?
Usually
no, you have to tie it for them. Yeah, so now suddenly that's the new standard. So they drop from the actual standard and now that's the standard. You know, so that's why you would close the deal. If they don't, that's fine, but they shouldn't think it's a standard. They shouldn't say, no, we don't have to do that, or this is the standard. No, it's not a standard. The standard is if your eating place is directly in front of the deities, if the deities are off to the side, it doesn't matter. But if you're right in front of the deities, then yeah, you'd make arrangements. Because, you know, our eating, yeah, I thought maybe we eat nicely, maybe we don't. We make a slob, we make a mess, we talk all kinds of stupid stuff. So that's why deity room is one place and where you eat's generally another place. But because it's in the house, it's smaller than you with the deities in a nice location. But generally, you'd want to connect it more with the living room, you know, like that, than you would with the dining room or kitchen. Mm-hmm. But if it's all one place, like nowadays, you know, open plan kind of houses, then, you know, it may be they're right there. So then what's the problem of putting up the little curtain or a little, you know, you have those little foldable little, you know, four little piece, little foldable things. They stand on their own. Easy. Keep that. Just put that there. Haribol. So it's just a matter of, so it's the standard. Rupa Goswami mentioned is one of the 64 items of devotional service.
Is it proper when we are invited to a friend's house, devotee, when they don't have this habit of closing the deities, is it proper that we ask them to close it for us, or how should we deal
with it? No, don't worry about it.
If it's open, we just eat in front of them?
You just, you know, tell Krishna, sorry about that, but this is the local practice, you know, so. And at home, you do what you do.
Okay.
You know, when you're there, then what can you do? Because otherwise they get grumpy and this and that, and then they won't invite you over to the house because, oh, we got to close the curtain. And that's so much trouble, you know, moving that arm that much, like, oh, my God, it hurts for 2 weeks, and, you know, stuff like that. So, you know, why bother people?
Okay, thank you.
You can be Krishna conscious. And they're taking prasad, and so haribol, that's good.
Thank you.
Okay. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Hare Krishna.
I have a question from previous talk because you explained so clearly and understandable that we should give to the people, that we should connect with Krishna, all the people who comes on yoga class or Ayurveda seminars and those kind of things. That's totally clear and understandable. And my question is, what about with the devotees who are initiated, who have the second initiation, and you see they are leaving Krishna consciousness? So
they're leaving Krishna consciousness.
Leaving. Like
that's because, their choice.
Yeah.
And so then, what's the question?
The question here is because it happens to me, the third very close friend of mine. With the first one, when I noticed that she stopped chanting and, you know, she's living there to her, with her saying, trying to save her. But, she said that she doesn't want to have any contact with me anymore. So I lost my friend. And then another one, because I had that.
But now here, now the problem comes is you lost your friend. You didn't lose a devotee. The only problem here is you lost a friend. Why did you lose a friend? Because you weren't being a friend. You were just being a devotee, not a friend. So therefore, you lost your friend.
Because I was just a devotee.
You were just being a devotee like you would with anybody else. So whether they were a friend or not a friend, you would have said the same thing. They're a friend, they're not. Just be a friend. Just be pleasant and be nice. And then like that, and then gradually they'll get it together. You know, because the thing is what you're saying here is like you're saying is, oh no, but then we lose the, no, but you didn't say we lost the devotee. You said I lost a friend. That was your concern.
So we just need to be there, like you said, nice and be there.
Be there and supportive and this and that. And when they want to get it, the point is it's voluntary. They want to get it together. So if they're a friend and a long-term friend, then you're always nice. Every time you see him, you're pleasant with him. Don't bring it up. How are they doing? What's happening? What are they doing these days? You know, they find a job. Okay, how's the job going? Or, you know, how's this, that, you know, whatever jazz they're into. Doesn't mean you got to get involved or anything like that, but it just means, you know, it's about them and this and that. And you know, you don't have to bring it up.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
But that doesn't mean, oh no, see, we don't bring it up to anybody and this and that. If there's an opportunity they want to talk, then you bring it up. But if you see that they're not into it, don't bring it up. Because if they have an affection for the devotees, then they may gravitate back. But otherwise they think, you know, I was this and I was having a problem, they didn't this and that, so karmis are so much nicer and this and that. You know, it's Maya's illusion. Because if the karmis are so nice, why'd they become a devotee in the first place?
Got it.
But whatever, people forget. they get distracted. Prabhupada says sometimes the jiva becomes tired. So they just want to relax. Okay, so then relax. Cool. Yeah, you drive a car?
Yes.
You ever drive in a manual?
Yes.
Okay. And so if you're driving the manual and you're going uphill, right? Do you sometimes have to use the clutch and that? So that's what you do.
Yes.
In other words, when things are going full, you do, and when it's not, then you start putting the clutch in. So now if you do bump into them, it'll have to be the clutch is fully in, or you've got it neutral. And then you'll see that, and then slowly, slowly it'll come back. Because the point is how long can they be out there? Maya makes everything look nice until you go out there. Maya's very clever, you know? You're a devotee and, oh, there's so much trouble. The karmis is so nice. And then you give up devotion. So go out there. Then you find it's just as bad. That's just how Maya works. So at some point they come around. Generally, you know, can be within, some months. Sometimes after 6 months, somebody gets together. Sometimes it's after 2 years, 2, 3. Sometimes some people take 10 years and then they come around to see what's stupid. A few really hard cases, you know, they're just so determined, might take them 20 years, but they eventually figure it out because Maya's no different than it was before. So if you're there and supportive, but you know, some people is that, you're nonsense. So then who wants to hang out with them? You know, so you just try to be supportive. You know, you don't, it doesn't mean that you're necessarily, doing what they're doing. You know, you have your life, they have theirs. And if there's some common points to interact, great. If there's not, then, you know, it's just like this. Let us say you have a friend that you met at the ski resort. And so then, you know, every year you get together at the ski resort and hang out and go skiing and talk skiing and, you know, these skis, that skis, this pole, that pole. You know, this track, that track, you know, this powder, that powder, you know, like this. And then let's say one of you stops skiing. Now what are you going to talk about? You know, so then, you know, if there's nothing, then what do? Just be pleasant and hi, well, that's it. You know, so is that there's something common, there's something to talk about. And if not, then you just be pleasant.
Okay. Thank you. Yes, thank you. Maharaj, can I ask you one short question regarding some devotees are very artistic. They love art and they do amazing things through the art. And using like they make a cup and on a cup they draw Jagannath Baladev and Subhadra and then they give you as a present to drink whatever milk in that cup. And the last thing which I saw, one devotee made like from Jagannath Baladev in Subhadra, like one deity, and the head was half of Jagannath and half below part was Subhadra. So one part was faces half Jagannath, half Baladev, and below was Subhadra as a deity. And I don't know how we relate with those kind of things. Can we do, is this some kind of offense or is it proper to
use? For things like that, I would tend to just put them on the, you know, put them on the shelf in a nice place, something to look at. You know, it's just like, you know, it's like when you go visit some place and you buy tchotchkes from that place and you put it on your shelf. So that's what you do. You know, or if you have Jagannath deities, then you could use it as a mug for, you know, milk or whatever it is for one of the deities.
Okay.
You know, but otherwise for yourself, I would just tend to those kind of things that turn into a deity. Just put it on the shelf nicely there, you know, something to look at. Remind you of Krishna.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Hare.
I think if I could ask something, Maharaj, I was thinking about during this sort of time recently, for most devotees who haven't been able to go to the temple, haven't been able to attend festivals, today is Lord Jagannath's Rath Yatra. So what part do these festivals play in our daily lives, and how do we internally like observe them?
The point is that a festival means utsava. So ut means to rise above, and sava means the, you know, just the ordinary day-to-day, you know, the rat race, you know, the difficulties of day-to-day life. So the festival is for reminding you of Krishna so that you're not absorbed in just, you know, paying the bills and, you know, did you take out the garbage and that kind of jazz. So then it's a matter of you can do something in your house, or you can read pastimes, or nowadays, you know, you can watch Rath Yatra online and all that. It's in Puri, they're running their Rath Yatra. You know, so they can watch there, or if there's any old things they can do, or just read the pastimes in Chaitanya Charitamrita, or, you know, like that. Cook a feast for Jagannath, or chant rounds for Jagannath, or, you know, just find something to do.
Mm-hmm. So just see it as an extra opportunity to remember Krishna.
Yeah, no, that's what the whole idea is for us, because on a day-to-day, you're following what you can maintain, what's sustainable. Mm-hmm. Festivals are for doing extra.
Okay.
Because otherwise what happens is people try to do extra on regular days, and then they do it for a time, and then they can't, and it just stops. I find it's fine on a daily, what you can do, that it's standard, it's that you get your rounds done, you get this done, and you know, it may not be as much as you'd like, but you know, you're getting stuff done. Then on festivals, that's where you do more. You chant extra rounds on the festivals, do more reading on the festivals, you know, spend more time in the temple on festivals, or do other services, or do more cooking, or you know, whatever it is, that's the time to do that extra that you would like to do anyway. And then it makes it that, you know, you might with time do a little bit more in your daily.
Mm-hmm.
But the idea is the daily is steady, nitya.
Yes, thank you.
Okay.
Shamsundri Machi.
Should I ask something about the sadhana?
Why not?
In the Svadhyaya part, what you said yesterday, the sadhana means this is spiritual sadhana means spiritual cultivation.
Yes, and spiritual cultivation.
And sometimes when we spoke about sadhana with devotees, they said this is what is your daily routine, a connection with Krishna, and to be in the temple or not, this is just a really, really small part on the sadhana. So can you speak about what is the real situation in the sadhana in old life?
The point is that,
you know,
but they have to cultivate their spiritual life. So therefore, that's what the temple is for. It's a nice place you can come together. It's all about Krishna. Everybody there is about Krishna, and so they're all chanting. So, you know, it works very nicely. So that's why, you know, for those at the temple or community around the temple, then that the temple becomes the center of the sadhana. But you do have the aspect of that the sadhana goes beyond just what's in the temple. It's also at home, how you do things, the regularity there, you know, how you're trying to absorb yourself in Krishna. So sadhana means practice, and that practice means practice in connection with Krishna, not practice how to make more money or, you know, how to be able to, you know, how you say, do a backflip or something like that. You know, so that's there. Then within the temple, the pancharatrik system, you have then, after your breakfast and before the evening, you have then what is your particular occupational duties. So now if your duties are fully within the temple, so you're doing puja for the deities all day or some other, or management or something connected with the temple all day, then that's nice, because then it's more close. But if not, if it's going out and doing some work other places, then that's where it fits in, so that you do that at that time and not do it when it's other time. In other words, work, you do at work time, and sadhana, you do at sadhana time.
Mm-hmm.
you know, not that in the morning during japa, then you're trying to make all your, doing all your networking for your business. And then while you're at the office, then that's when you're doing, you know, so you just find what works. Now, if you can work in some, you know, you have a break for lunch and you can chant some rounds, then why not? You know, like I remember one businessman, he was saying that he the amount of work he has in the office, I think he said is about 4 hours in a day. Because he owned the business. But if he wasn't there, then for the full 8 hours, then no one else would do their job nicely. If he left, then they'd all get lazy and just do anything. So I asked him, okay, in his office, he can see everybody. He said, yes. He says, but can you put your computer so you can see the computer, but they can't see the computer? And he said, yeah. So he says, so why don't you just, you know, read Bhagavatam all, you know, for that time or do something. So you could be chanting and reading Bhagavatam, but they can't see. They just think you're doing work. And now and again, you look around the corner to see that, you know, what's going on. So whatever, you can work these things into what you're doing. But this whole idea is that, oh, we don't need the temple and like that. It's kind of like, you know, so if we don't need the temple, we also don't need family life. We don't need a house. The six Goswamis just followed sadhana all day and sat under a different tree every night, Prabhupada said. You know what I'm saying? But we don't need the temple, but they have to have their house. We don't need the temple and the devotees and the sadhana, but I need my job and my money. I don't need the temple, but I need my family. I don't need the temple, but I need my car. So what's going on here? This is not a balance. The point is, yes, I do have much I can in the temple and all that, but I'm not limited to the temple of doing sadhana. I can also do sadhana when I'm riding on the bus going to work. I can also do sadhana when, you know, during the lunch break, I'm sitting in the park and eating my lunch. I can also then do some chanting or do a little reading. You know, if they give you 45 minutes, it only takes you 10 minutes to eat. So that means I got half an hour to do some sadhana. You know, so like that, it's not limited to the temple. The temple is the natural place where you can set the nice standard of sadhana and people can get together to, you know, to engage in sadhana and encourage each other. But it's not limited to the temple. But this idea, this new idea that's come up that, oh, we don't need the temple. It's kind of like, yeah, and then what are you going to have? You know? You know, so the whole idea is, yes, you can fool yourself that I'm so Krishna conscious, but the point is without the association of devotees, how do we move forward? So unless they're getting that by sitting at home and reading and chanting and all that, then you'll see it in their character. So in other words, someone who is advancing at home doesn't have a problem in taking part in the temple program, right? But the person who isn't advancing at home then wants to say, I don't need to go to the temple. You know what I'm saying? That's the whole point, is that if they can sit, you know, like, if they can sit there and chant their japa all day at home, sit down there for, you know, 4 or 5 hours and chant straight, they also wouldn't have a problem chanting at the temple. Unless, of course, at the temple, everyone's yelling around and running and screaming and this and that, then they naturally, then they can just go to the corner and go up in that balcony up on the top and that, you know. You know. So that's the whole, or go into Tulsi's place and sit down there in front of Vrinda. You know, so the whole point is that the temple is a natural place to congregate. And then besides that, at your own home, you try to make also there that that's also a place to practice your sadhana. But this idea that we don't need temples, we only need communities, it's kind of like it's bogus, because one is that How is Krishna becoming the center of that community? Who's training them? Who's doing the programs? Who's training people and how to practice devotional service? It's not. The people who say we don't need temples, we only need community, are not developing, cultivating the community. You understand? The two go together. They all both have their place. You know, it's like saying, you know, they both go together. Communities are centered around temples. Temples are the center of a community. So they go together. Like rice and dal, you know. So they go together.
Okay.
Is that okay? So people can, That means at their home, if they're practicing, that's great. But that doesn't mean we don't need the temple.
Sometimes it's hard for me because here a lot of devotees live really, really close to the temple.
Right.
And they said they are happy at home because they have one sadhana. So just, so this is not living in a city so far from the temple.
Yeah, yeah, of course. When you have a community, the idea is about the temple. Mm-hmm. You know? So like that, then they do the best they can. You know, and let's say, mm-hmm. you know, someone, you know, they would come and take part as much as they can, depending on the service and this and that. You know, but what to do? Mm-hmm. You have to just see it. So when it comes to a festival, when it comes to their service that they're doing in the community, do they take part nicely or they don't? And if they don't, then that means their sadhana is not really working that efficiently. You know, mm-hmm. they're still living there, they're still devotees, but it's not as efficient because how do they like to take part? Are they enthusiastic for these things?
Mm-hmm. Not exactly.
Yeah. Therefore, how well is the sadhana working? That they're doing some sadhana, that's good. That's great. But that was the idea before. That's why you have the village and then you have on the farm. The farm should be those who want to take part. And the village is for those who, you know, identify with the movement, identify with the temple in there and the whole community. But, you know, they have their priorities and when they can, they come to the temple and when they can't, they don't.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's a prestige thing. That's also the thing. But then you have to be careful not to make it a prestige thing. Now living in here, you got this, that, and living there. No. Because the point is that, you know what I'm saying? You know, say they can't come to this or they can't do that. If we make so many things there, then no one wants to be part of the village. They want to be, they want the facility, so they want to be in the community, but they don't want to follow the rules.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense? So, mm-hmm. so that's the whole thing is you have to look at it is that the village is there, then you have to encourage them to take part rather than make them feel like outcasts. At the same mm-hmm. time is the commitment of those on the farm, it's obvious that it's a little bit more. So that would naturally be respected, but it's not that you have to make such a social distance.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense? Otherwise, those that mm-hmm. should be in the village will want to be on the farm because they don't want to be looked at as second class because of their false ego. But then the problem is they're going to live on the farm and then live the lifestyle of someone who's second class. Or it's like, you know, you can't follow all that, you don't do it, then live in the village and come when you can. Try to have some regular service, try to have some regular this and that.
I think it's not happening. Generally, we are the second class. Okay. So.
No, but I'm talking about you go back in time before, that was the rule.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, maybe now it's reversed, but so the point is that mm-hmm. you follow things nicely, you do things nicely, you try to please Krishna. Krishna understands this, and so you'll get the benefit. And others don't do, they'll get less benefit. In other words, as you surrender, Krishna reciprocates. So if you're doing more things and absorb more, then great. Then Krishna will see that.
Yes, but sorry. So it would be more nice if we would be more people, more devotees together.
Yes, it would be. But if not, then whoever is together, you find a few people that like to be together and make them who you hang out with. Instead of hanging mm-hmm. out with 100 people, you hang out with 2 or 3.
Okay. Okay. Okay.
You know, in other words, you like to go to the temple, find 2 or 3 other people who like to go. Even one other person likes to go to the temple and hang out with them.
Okay. Okay. Okay.
Yeah. Thank and you. Then I nobody understand. Else wants to go to the temple. That's their loss. You know, they can hang out with people who don't want to go to the temple.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay. Hare Krishna.
Thank you.
Markandeya Prabhu.
Hare Krishna. So I guess this would be the natural end for today. And maybe we could leave, if there are any more questions, maybe we could leave them for tomorrow then, for tomorrow's discussion, since now it is 9 o'clock. Thank you very much.
Yes.
Thank you very much, Maharaj, for the class, and we would like to thank everyone for participating. So we will see you tomorrow, same time.
Okay. Very good. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna, Hare Maharaj.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.